So here with another Social Expedition on the Road podcast, today over in the offices of Dr. Francis Fabian, who's an assistant professor with expertise in strategic management and entrepreneurship. So Dr. Fabian, hey, welcome to the expedition, it's great to be here in your office.
Well, I'm glad to share what we're doing over here at the University of Memphis.
A lot of very interesting things. We've been talking here a little bit before actually hitting the record button. You've been steadily blowing my mind with some very deep things here. Kind of preparing for this, you know, we were talking about what kind of things we talk about in the podcast. You listened to the last podcast.
I did.
And that kind of
the beta life.
Yeah, the life in perpetual beta. In that conversation, we kind of brought up that I don't know, it seems like an age-old argument about academia not being able to keep up with what's going on in the real world. And
yes.
And so immediately during that conversation, I thought about one of your classes, one of those on entrepreneurship, and I thought, you seem to be really actually real time to me, what's going on here. So that didn't fit. So what do you say? That argument didn't seem to fit anymore.
I think it's going to be sensitive to the different professors and mm-hmm. what they're teaching. So when you came in, I'm trying to teach entrepreneurship or strategy. Mm-hmm. And in those cases, top managers are having to look at their environment, assess the trends, and then figure out what kinds of decisions to make. Now, what we bring to it is, okay, here's the received view about the way you should teach these things. Here's some heuristics. I often say the university teaches you the secret handshake for business, that everybody expects you to understand these terminologies and this way of talking. And so in that sense, we do bring you some recipes that may not be relevant anymore. But in my classes, because I have to teach you how do these recipes relate to real life, mm-hmm. we go out there and we spend a lot of time looking at current events and looking at how people are interacting today. My personal interest is strongly related to online communities and social media, so that comes up a lot in my class. Yeah. I make the students all have to do a blog for the whole semester so that they have to learn how to put themselves out there. I've taken YouTube videos and sent them videos of themselves so they see how they present themselves, yeah. all on unlisted sites, so you can't see those. I'm trying to use a lot of that media, and I think a lot of us are online with that. We're also introducing a lot more online courses.
Right.
Because I think that's the university's just having a lot of people sit in a chairs and passively be lectured to. Mm-hmm. I think that our previous speaker, forgot her name, was right.
Oh, okay.
That's an anachronism.
Melissa Pierce.
Melissa, that's it.
You see that thing go on right now, like with these conferences and this kind of thing. The conferences even now are more interactive. It's not so much you just kind of go in and stick to yourself and watch the presenter.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of interaction.
Papers and, the posters and buttons and, yeah.
So I graduated a few doors down at the College of Engineering back in 1990. And... There wasn't regular email then, and if you wanted to do information, you had to be in industry,
right?
Or wait till things were published, or you had to mail off for things or go to libraries and read trade journals and this to kind of try and stay.
Scare people. They're gonna know what dinosaurs we are.
Well, I kind of feel like a vampire. Multiple epics. But now, like the first time I met you was at a Society of Entrepreneurs event.
Correct.
Where there was no doubt a speaker.
I'm out there and mm-hmm. listening, and I think University of Memphis is definitely recognizing that that's where we're going to have to be value added. We have to be out there in the community, mm-hmm. and we're having we have something called Strengthening Communities Grants, where people are getting grants for doing localized interventions that apply research to a community problem. So I definitely think it's no longer just a rubber stamp institution, which if you want to get a job, you had to have the sheepskin from the university. It's not working that way anymore. So we're starting to have to rethink what we're bringing to the community as well.
And what about, you know, in addition to, you know, a set number of courses and hours and this type of thing, that actual hands-on experience and people talking about the significance of that in it, in its application towards a degree?
It's going to vary. I think any student can figure out how to just, you know, if you're a math major, that's not necessarily going to be what will be rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it will vary by major. It'll vary by what professors you've run into. But I think the writing's on the wall that we have to rethink the paradigms of the value added. This movement toward online courses is an example of we're just no longer, people aren't going to buy into anymore that I have to go to a classroom to have somebody show me PowerPoints. So that's gone. You know, we all can see PowerPoints. We can see better PowerPoints than what professors are going to bring. So it's a hard life to be a professor because now you have to rethink, you know, I don't have the monopoly on information. It's the same thing realtors went through.
Mm-hmm.
When you wanted to buy a house, you had to go to the realtor because they had the big secret MLS book.
Right.
Well, you know, I showed up here with my list to the realtor. I said, these are the houses I want to go see.
Mm-hmm.
So professors are pretty much in the same situation. If they want to go up there and say, and so this is the way it is, you're going to get hands up in the classroom that says, excuse me, but, and in fact, they do that regularly, so you have to.
Well, that's good that the hands are going up.
Yeah,
instead
be
of,
on the defense sometimes.
Instead of, you know, like a back channel, like up on Twitter.
We or, still get know. Grades,
yeah.
So we can still say, hands or not, I grade you. Still a dictatorship.
But it's a very progressive dictatorship, I think.
Well,
yeah.
It's pragmatic. You know,
yeah.
In the end, we need money, and people aren't going to come to a university if they don't get value.
Mm-hmm.
So if they feel that the dictatorship is is just random, then they're not going to come.
So, you know, what's in your toolkit as far as the tools and the things that you do to keep abreast of what's going on in industry? Because, you know, how long have you been in academia?
Oh,
let's say as a
cruel.
Full-time. Ah, yeah, sorry. But, you know.
In academia, so I spent 6 years with the General Accounting Office right out of my master's at Harvard. So then I went into getting a doctorate at UT Austin. So that started in 91.
Okay.
That means starting in 1991, I kind of turned in one of those insular pinhead people. Because once you start a doctoral program, you no longer have tendrils into real life. And
that's it, huh?
You know, they just, yeah, you're out in your hammock reading really odd articles and such. So that's been a while that I've spent my life.
Okay.
You know, 19 years, I guess. I've been teaching for 13 years.
Okay.
14 this fall.
So in the 13, 14 years, the tools that you used to use to try and understand what was going on out there in industry compared to what you do now is no doubt.
Not even in the same. You see, there's this long shelf of journals,
mm-hmm.
and thankfully the green and brown ones over there, they stopped sending us paper ones, but these pink ones still come. I don't open that pink one because I can also access it from my computer,
mm-hmm.
and download the PDF.
Okay.
So I never open that thing up. I can download everything in that one sitting on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So they just keep, until they finally get those electronic, we put them up there so you think that we look very intelligent.
Well, these
are just
very,
for show.
It's a very classic style.
Yes.
You know, this,
well,
these
don't
stacks
you think
of books.
I'm not a professor,
you know?
So there they are. But I don't even, most of those don't have cracked bindings because I'm going to get it off of the internet,
yes.
where I can scan and read much faster. Mm. Now, my glasses keep getting thicker because of it, but that's one reason. So instantaneously, not only that, we would read the two or three journals that came, and then we'd have to go and research at the library related journals. Now I'm sort of expected, when I want to look at some very small specific issue, I have databases that can show me how 100, 600 journals have ever addressed that one little issue.
Right.
So it's much more specialized,
mm-hmm.
and there's much more reading associated, because I have to read through the titles and abstracts of 400 or 500 articles to pick out the 30 or 40 that are relevant.
Okay.
So that's a huge change in how I do my job. But for how I get my information on current events, that's all changing. I mean, I don't have to listen to, William Cronkite. And, you know, growing up, we had ABC, NBC, and CBS, and this has been discussed, right? We don't do that anymore. I can go and read economist blogs. So I read the blogs of people who are simpatico with my worldview, or else who are also the same education level on the particular issue I'm interested in, right? So I'm going to be reading economists and strategic management at a PhD level.
Right.
And so now I can go right to the blogs. I don't want to read what USA Today tells me about this latest stimulus. I want to read what the latest Nobel Prize winner or let's go for somebody more radical than that, you know, Chicago Boys, whatever.
Because you're spending more of your time these days on entrepreneurship.
That's right.
Yeah. And even that itself is turning inside out.
Absolutely.
As you watch it. And nobody knows exactly where it's going.
And it's not just entrepreneurship. You know? I mean, mm-hmm. our business environment right now is in complete tumult. I read... One blog is, Mish. He likes to talk about how we're going into deflation. And then Zero Hedge, another famous financial blog, is all based on hyperinflation. And you basically have that kind of spectrum in front of you that, you know, we're heading to extended depression, deflation, or we're heading into wheelbarrows of money. I think the answer is somewhere in the middle, but you're trying to be an entrepreneur in that. I tell the entrepreneurs in my class, I said, the last thing you want to do is listen to me, because I'm an expert on the system that's broken. I can tell you inside out about this broken system.
That's fantastic.
With the current structure of our economy is not going to pull us out of this.
Mm-hmm.
So entrepreneurs are our only answer. They have to come up with the new structures that are going to bring us to the next step.
And so how, if you're the expert in the broken system, you know,
exactly.
So how are you, what direction are you guiding these new entrepreneurs in to maybe find new areas, new ways of doing things?
Well, you know, I'm telling them some things about the importance of networking and getting out in the community and finding out what do people need or want, because mm-hmm. the first thing is always customer need, right? We need to know what that is. I have them reading a book that's called Lessons from the Poor, that's by Losa, and it talks to you about how people have survived or created successful entrepreneurial firms in places like Nigeria or Argentina during guerrilla warfare and hard environments.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, I want you to think past the fact, first of all, don't complain about the U.S., because these people started businesses in extremely adverse situations.
Yeah.
But I try to let them see that even in the most adverse, seemingly closed situations, people have succeeded at making entrepreneurial firms. But really, I don't know what the answer is going to be for the next round of our economy. But I know we're going to need people who think on their feet. I'm sending them off to Ignite at Launch Memphis.
Great.
So I'm taking my MBAs there. We're going to go listen
Wonderful.
To you talk. And the idea is you got to watch TED. You got to watch Zeitgeist. You got to listen to speakers and see if some things resonate.
You know, I've got a code for you, by the way, for Ignite. I can get you.
All right.
So yeah, we get a little discount
there.
About
the podcast. Everybody's going to call you for a code.
Hey, we want to pack the house.
Oh, okay. Well, then call for the code.
Because it's not, you know, for us, it's not just the presentations. It's the getting the people together.
Exactly.
To talk about these things, to inspire new thought, far more new thought than you could have if you were just sitting in your cocoon, you know, watching the same presentation on, let's say, YouTube, for example.
Exactly. You know? So possibly an interaction could occur.
That's a big thing that we want to have. This community and this interaction and this idea exchange and inspiring each other. And so it's great that you're going to have the students out there, because it seems like more and more that's one of the essential ingredients to what's going on out there, is to make these connections with other people.
I think, you know, before we did the podcast, I was talking to you about some of the research I've done is trying to understand this online community world that we're in. We're no longer a world where people are finding community from where they live, or even necessarily their church or their profession. More and more, it's from the blogs they watch, or the Facebook community friends they have, some hobbies, you know, NASCAR or whatever it'll be. And so, you know, one of the things I think that Memphis may really have a leg up on is we're moving some of that online and social to real life, and trying to use the online as a stepping stone to getting people together in real life.
Great.
To the extent, so then that way, that's a good thing. That's when you say social media is being used correctly. When you're out there on Facebook and all your friends live in, say, Alaska and Antarctica, and you're here in Memphis, I'm not as comfortable with that, because then, you know, then you get pasty white and sickly looking. I like it that you're here and you're joining communities in Memphis that then have meetings, and you'll talk to people, press the flesh, and then perhaps start doing it. So I like the connection. I'd like to see, you know, my fantasy online world is that there is a real life parallel or place that these online communities connect back to.
Awesome.
It's still good to have friends in Alaska and Antarctica. Just don't spend all your time with those two virtual people.
Antarctica's on my bucket list.
Yeah. Okay.
I had to do a slideshow about Antarctica decades ago, and ever since then I've been in love with
going down there. Yeah. That looks cold.
Yeah. But I would take adequate clothing. So, you know, like peer groups is something that it seems to me that is an essential thing, and it sounds like, you know,
everything we know about people. I mean, who would have thought the internet was going to be what it is now? I remember when it first hit 1 billion pages, and the founders had said, we would never have assumed that this content could be created, that it was humanly possible to create the amount of content that's out there. So it's beyond anything people planned on,
and we continually surprise ourselves, I think, as a creature, you know. Of the planet here,
these big questions was why do people participate in these communities? That was a big research question, because we had all these views of altruism, you know, that you would go in and give advice or do things, and it was really based on the economic tit for tat strategy. That's why you're going to participate. It turns out people also do it because they like to have reputation as an influencer, maybe because it's their social identity. You know, this is my role as being in this community. Maybe they like the emotional support. There were a lot of reasons why people will contribute to a community's material and information. We didn't have any foresight of that, because we assumed that you only participate if you get paid for it or you get something back. And that's not at all how people interact in their online communities.
You know, but there is some fake identities going on out there right now to try and influence other people from a business standpoint.
Definitely, that was sort of the underlying theme that came out in the research that we talked about earlier that I'm associated with. And I think that's what that's bringing back, is how important trust is going to be in these online communities. People are going to put up more walls. They're going to put in more checks. Because, you know, a lot of these blogs, I tend to be one of those lurkers who goes down and looks at the comments to try to get a feel for what's going on.
Yeah.
But more and more, there are people in there who are attempting to sway people into believing false humans are out there, either to create xenophobia against alternative viewpoints by depicting how the detractor is, you know.
Right.
Or they're putting in false information just to get, they might try to hurt a competitor's reputation.
Mm-hmm.
I know we had a wonderful Emerge Memphis, Mark's Menus is out there. Well, it's very important that people say the real thing. You don't want somebody going in there and saying, I think I got salmonella poisoning from the Chinese place, just because they own the competitive Chinese place four blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's going to be the next frontier of how we're going to really maintain trust. You know, the rating of the commenters is one of the ways that we try to do that.
Okay.
But I don't know. I think we are going to face a lot of cynicism and problems in online communities unless they're heavily monitored, which is a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you start creating communities which only you and the people you know talk on, then you have the problems like they had with the, say, Journalist. You remember there was that set of 55 or so, it's probably 155, I've forgotten the number, of only accepted journalists to a particular set of discussion boards.
And
you start feeling comfortable and you only hear people who say what you already believe,
mm-hmm.
and you lose your ability to understand what is the more general worldview.
Right.
Did you see the 10-10 video story recently?
No, I sure hadn't.
That was a case where a nonprofit in England put together what they thought was a humorous video to encourage greater conservation. And for October 10th. Unfortunately, their humor was about exploding children and exploding people on the camera and having them land, their innards land on other people's clothing and such. And
mm-hmm.
Well, simply, it was an egregiously awful, epic fail type of video.
Yeah.
And so this is what this last weekend, and the reason I bring that up is because all the people involved apparently were talking to themselves and had no idea that Sony and Kyocera and other sponsors of their nonprofit were going to say, no more money to you if you're going to do this sort of dreck. You know?
They were all drinking the same
Kool-Aid. One side, we talk about having to close off these bad actors from putting comments on or seeding misinformation for their advantage. On the other hand, once you start closing those walls, you're more likely to make these isolated communities where everybody believes the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Do you use the phrase echo chamber?
I haven't really used that
you
phrase.
You know, this concept that you're referring to where people are...
Oh, echo. ECHO.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I had no H in there. No, I haven't seen that. But echo chamber, yes. Now I know what an echo chamber is. Sheesh.
Is that a phrase that you use here?
I know the phrase. I haven't used it for this. But yeah, that's exactly what it would be.
Yeah, okay.
You have an echo chamber. You're all, you know, and we call that homophily, getting more and more alike.
Whoa.
Because communities, over time, because that's what you're exposed to, they actually help shape your morals and norms.
Yeah.
Especially norms. What's normal? Well, if you're more and more with some edge community, you're going to think these edge views are normal.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't know that you're in the edge because we're all talking and saying the same thing.
Yeah.
I think it's a real... The election that we're facing right now, to me, indicates that people are talking right past each other, and we're getting more and more of these isolated communities that are edge. Don't we all know this is the way the world works? And we don't. We totally disagree on the assumptions and causal models.
Now in this paper that you wrote, the strategies for online communities. Are you? How would I say that? There was a team of people that wrote this.
There were three of us. We put together a theory and we used a simulation to try to understand the dynamics of online communities. Assuming you were a company and you wanted to add to an online community's discussion in favor of your product, mm-hmm. where should you be investing your money? Should you be going to communities that are hostile to you? Should you go to communities that are already loyal and reinforce it? Or should you just uniformly send out advertising to all of the different ones? I'd like to say that it should be ethical and above board and say, hey, I'm a representative of this new DVD system.
Yeah.
You know, and this is why we think it's a better product. Well, where do you want to spend your money? Because you don't just walk into an online community and send those spam notes. We all know what we do to those, right? We delete them or we give them thumbs down so that they're actually turned off and such. So you have to really spend resources if you're going to choose communities to interact with. So we were trying to understand in what cases would you best be spending money where, mm-hmm. if you were an strategy for a new product.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. And this is the paper is timeless.
It should be, because it could actually affect various other general. It'd be generalized to other phenomena.
How can we find this online somewhere?
You bet you can. It's in fact, Google will send it to you. But if you're a member of the university community, you always have free access to these kinds of articles. Otherwise, you can email me, and I just attach it and PDF it.
Okay.
And you can always find me. Just Google Francis Fabian, and I'll show up with my web page. Yes, I have a web page.
Great.
That I put up there with EnView and everything.
Now, where is that? Is that francisfabian.com?
No, it's on the Memphis page.
Okay.
It's just...
What I want to do is to be able to get that link from you so we can put it on the blog post that goes along with this podcast. Oh. And if you wanted to, you know, hang the PDF off of that, we could do that as well, or point.
I think
it
would probably be better if they come through me. I think that's how supposed to do an interactive. I don't
think
I'm supposed to make it available via the net.
Gotcha.
But I think I can
one-on-one.
But I'm happy to answer it and be available. You pay my salary, so I'm your state and city resource here.
Well, I look forward to going through that and trying to soak some more of that in, because there was so much that you tossed out there before we hit the record button. You know, one of the other things that we were just talking about a few moments ago was the fact, this trust issue, and the fact that people are trying to game the system, or even game your trust. Mm-hmm. You know,
absolutely.
So people are putting testimonials out there that are false.
Absolutely.
In fact, you'll love this.
Sony and Walmart got caught doing it.
Mm-hmm. So you know, you take big, huge, influential companies like that who get caught. As far as I know, so far these have been fairly minor types of things.
They have been.
But no doubt.
That we know of.
Exactly. So no doubt, some of these big, deep pocket companies that have, you know, huge budgets must be tempted to get out there and fabricate.
I believe it's out there. Mm-hmm. You know, I see all these work at home types of jobs that are available out there, and there seems to be, I think there's plenty of evidence that some people are being hired to go out and just spend their day putting in negatives on a competitor or positives on a particular product.
Mm-hmm.
I told you before the podcast that I was looking at a survey site. So Amazon now pays you to take surveys. It's called MTURK, MTURK. And we use it to take surveys. It's 2 cents a survey or 3 cents. But when I was on that survey site, I was surveyed about people's blog submissions, comments to blogs. So it was comments. And they were poorly done grammatically, and some of them were offensive and insulting, but they were two different comments that were seemingly responding to each other. And I was being asked, is this nasty or nice? Is this sarcastic or is it not? So they're out there trying to find ways to better manipulate how people respond to comments. Or perhaps it could be a descriptive and try to understand how do people interpret the comments they see, and in when does it cross the line, what kinds of words make people cross the line. It seems to me, though, that kind of information has a huge potential for abuse if an organization wanted to mm-hmm. persuade or turn off people to products and things. So, it does mean that people will have to be more careful as to where they get their information. Don't just call up whatever, you know, DVDreviews.com. Well, that's probably being sponsored by a particular DVD company, and I'm sure everybody's seen this.
In some form or another, people have run across it. And I know many people feel like this will keep going on, and we're going to get to the point where you are no longer influenced by strangers. It becomes you're influenced by actual people that you maybe have met in real life, and you know that they exist and they're real human beings.
And that's where we're back to the online communities, because more and more people they know are some online community they're a member from. So if you have a medical condition, you know, if you have breast cancer, there's a breast cancer community. And then you'll go in there and these are the issues that are in your heart. And then you read what other people say. And you start to know four or five people in that community. And you'll start to trust people you've never met, but because you've interacted in this community forum. And then those people may be able to impact your view, but somebody random showing up on that community and saying, oh, you need to buy this type of medicine, you're not going to respond to. So online communities can create a way of knowing people because you do have multiple interactions. So there is some protections, but if you just show up at the community and you started to just peruse it, you could easily be misled. And so perhaps this will tell people you need to invest some time in creating relationships, even on these online communities, because they're filled with certain detritus of various spammers and liars. And
so. I know at one point, because of that very thing and actually not trusting someone unless you actually know them, in face-to-face, people were talking about social media really kind of driving a collapse of communities back to, you know, the Little House on the Prairie days where... These real small communities.
And then with the online community, we're back to that issue of because you're pushed that way, because you get cynical, you may indeed start spending all your time with people who think just the way you do. The point of our article was that we really are in a situation where it is low cost to switch to a different community. So as soon as that community offends you or you don't agree with it enough, you just stop going there, and you, with a click of a button, you can find one closer to the way you think. And now you're in a community where we all talk alike and think alike, and we all parrot the exact same, because we're comfortable there. You know, I'm the first one to say that there are websites I'm more comfortable at, they follow my causal model of the world better than other websites. Because it's my job, I go lurking on those other websites and study what they say. But no, I'm going to trust the ones that are more like me. Hopefully I'm being affected to have a more open mind, but I certainly see it impacts and reinforces my worldview to be able to see lots of people with my worldview say it back to me.
Sure.
And if it's affecting me, it's got to be affecting other people. Not that I'm not.
So we kind of have this propensity to seek out the echo chamber.
Absolutely. Because you feel comfortable. You feel like you're in a community.
You know,
the more we move away from going to the local community center and having parties and instead party on Facebook tonight at the, you know, NASCAR's race or at the opera, you know, the blog on operas, Italian operas. I don't care if it's highbrow, you're still talking to people who only like Italian operas. And I'm sure they have oddities that we don't want to know about.
That's way technical and far over my head, the whole opera thing. Well, I really appreciate your time.
I hope I didn't go too long on you.
No. We're right on. You know, I'd look forward to some further interaction and talking.
Absolutely.
And finding out more, and I'm no doubt going to have some questions after reading this paper.
Well, you know, I'm a big Memphis fan, so my website also has a section called Emphasis on Memphis. It's full of links for entrepreneurs.
Oh, great.
So that they can see national, local, regional organizations. And I am a huge... I have lived in Los Angeles and Dallas and San Francisco, New York and Boston, and I think Memphis is the best. Oh, New Orleans and Charlotte, too.
I
love Memphis.
And you did live in Austin for a while.
I sure did, seven years.
And we're whooping their tails.
I love Memphis. We got great music. We got beautiful beautiful place with the green trees and the river and the, and I think that Memphis is going to show people the way when it comes to how do we live with each other. I think Memphis is a lot farther than they realize. People who live here and grown up all their lives say, oh, you know, we have problems between different communities. And I say, yeah, but you actually interact. You don't know what it's like in so many cities. Mm-hmm. So I think Memphis can show the way, because I think we love this city, and that I'm very excited to do everything I can to make communities come together, and that we can be that shining spot for others to say, well, look it. They get along in Memphis, even though they're different. Mm-hmm. So,
well, that's outstanding.
It's a great city. So anybody wants to hear more positives, I'm a big fan.
That's very promising.
Well,
thank
we
you.
Chose to live here.
So okay, where can we find you online?
I am at umpeople.memphis.edu, and then you do your backslash or your slash, and it's FF. A-B-I-A-N, so F. Fabian.
Okay.
You can also just Google Francis Fabian, and I show up.
Okay. Well, we'll get the links out there on that over to your site. We'll get it out then on the blog post that goes along with the podcast, and look forward to talking with you again. Thanks so much.
Well, yeah. You know, anything you want to hear about what we're doing here that I know about, I'll tell you.
Well, thanks so much, Dr. Fabian.